Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borak Thung Earthlets, and welcome to the 2000 AD Thrillcast. I am your host, Molchar, and this week we're getting the chills of some folk horror. Next week in the Galaxy's Greatest Comic will be the debut of new strip Thistlebone by T.C. Eglinton and Simon Davis, and we're very much looking forward to this brand new story. We're going to be talking to them in a second, but it's going to be in Prog 2135, which is out on the 12th of June. Make sure you pick up a copy from all good thrill merchants. I've read the first couple of episodes and very much enjoyed them. So horror is something that 2000 AD has done quite a bit of over the years, but it's always nice to see new takes and new series. So it is an absolute delight to welcome Tom Eglinton onto the podcast.
Hello, how are you doing?
And good, thank you. And Simon Davis.
Hello.
Hello. Right, guys. We'll come on to talking specifically about Thistlebone in a minute, but I wanted to explore the kind of ideas behind it, the themes behind it, influences, things like that. Tom, let's start off with you. Tell us a little bit about the genesis of Thistlebone and where it's coming from, because folk horror is a bit of a buzzy term over the last sort of 18 months, 2 years, 3 years. Mm. You've got things like Scarfolk, which riffs off a very particular type of 1970s experience, yeah, of growing up.
Golden age of folk horror.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Tell us a little bit about how Thistlebone came about and how this fits into that theme.
I think originally it started because both me and Simon were talking about folk horror that we really enjoyed. Mm. And it's just like a very specific kind of type of horror. The obvious example is The Wicker Man. That's like kind of the most renowned kind of folk horror. So it's got a very sort of specific feel to it. It's kind of got, you know, the kind of rural background, often strange folk traditions, weird cults, and sort of just a kind of feeling of disquiet is often goes through a lot of these kind of things. Recently it seems to have been coming back a lot. Like I think like Kill List is a good example of like kind of modern version of folk horror. And what else have we got? There's
A Field in England was.
That was great as well. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. But yeah, I got. Sorry, Tom, to interrupt.
Yeah,
but,
no, on you go.
But I sort of became quite interested in the folk horror genre through reading Adam Scoville's book about folk horror called Hours Dreadful and Things Strange, which is just sort of an overview of this this sort of strangely English sort of, and I think it probably is. I suppose British rather than English, but this sort of thing about the land being integral to almost like something that's reacting to the humans' involvement, particularly say sort of with the onset of Industrial Revolution and all that sort of stuff. And it's about the sort of inherent fear that as humans have of nature and the strangeness that nature can have. And so I got sort of quite interested in that, and then that sort of led to the sort of the, they call it the unholy trinity of Wicker Man, Blood on Satan's Claw, and Witchfinder General, which all sort of deal with the, you know, dark dealings in the sort of heart of the countryside. And what's interesting about folk horror is, apart from in those films, Blood on Satan's Claw, with Wicker Man and Witchfinder General, there's nothing sort of supernatural. There is no monster. It's just humans being monstrous to each other, sort of using sort of the supernatural, God or whatever, as a way of being able to do that sort of thing. And I quite liked that as a theme.
Yeah, and I think that was a bit of a jumping point for Thistlebone, and that we kind of wanted those kind of weird traditions, and almost like nature and people's reaction to nature being the kind of the nightmarish element, rather than something explicitly supernatural.
So in terms of what is horror for you guys, what you know, you've already mentioned the fact that in this kind of 1970s style horror, it's we who are the monsters more than anything. But what are the elements, what are the stylistic elements for you that kind of seal the deal on something like folk horror? That make it worthy of a nomenclature of its own?
I think specifically the kind of uncanny aspects of nature and the kind of disturbing aspects of nature, which is something I really enjoy, because it's something I spend a lot of time out in nature, out in the woods, and I see nature as, a lot of people see that as either very sort of idyllic, but I see it's quite horrible. And, you know, there's a hugely savage part to nature, which is strange to think about, especially in Britain, because we've got such a kind of like, it seems so calm and nice, but underneath everything, there's this kind of sort of dark side. And that's sort of the point, I think, with that I love with folk horror, specifically kind of connecting it also with traditions and rituals that are kind of hangovers from a different time that we still have, these kind of like mummering and wassailing and the Beltane Festival in Edinburgh, all sorts of stuff like that, that's kind of the part that I enjoy.
I mean, on a slight sort of tangent, I mean, it's quite prevalent specifically at the moment with sort of like the climate movement and all that sort of stuff, is about how far removed we seem to have come as a species from the very mother that gave birth to us. So it's that sort of trying to reconnect with it. And just quite how strange and fearful people are about it, or can be about it, because it's a whole other world that is going on within our world that we have no control over, particularly, or know anything about. So I quite like that sort of strangeness. Mm. And as for horror, I've been reading a lot of M.R. James stuff like that, which is not that too is not explicitly sort of horror. It's more sort of implied, and I much prefer that. And I think I read a thing about him, and he was saying that if you stretch your arm out to your side and slightly back, and then move it forward until you can just about have a sense of your fingers waggling, that is where the true horror lies, rather than in front of you. And it's completely true. And so I think folk horror has a lot of that sort of element, because so much of it is completely unseen and implied. So I much prefer that as a genre rather than, I don't know, your body horror and all that sort of stuff. Mm.
Do you think a referring back to things like the 1970s and even further, Tom, you mentioned some kind of traditions that have been maintained or revived over the last sort of 100 years. Do you think that calling back is a result of things like urbanisation, that actually for the vast majority of people now, the countryside is something that is far away, that is almost alien to them?
Yeah, and that's exactly it, because it's this kind of paradox that happens, that the more you're kind of concentrated in the city, and the safer you make it, when you do go into the countryside, it's suddenly much more threatening, and that's the kind of, we're trying to sort of tap into those feelings, those kind of like dark feelings of the countryside is this ancient thing that's always been there, that's always had an influence on us, and that you can't escape that. So you kind of, I think for a lot of people, their experience of the countryside can be quite sort of scary. They do see it as the other place. So you can kind of play with that a bit and kind of use it, especially with these kind of strange rituals that, I mean, I love them. I love the fact that still happens now, that there's been a kind of pagan revival. And so sort of Beltane and Samhain, these have become festivals, and we're kind of almost returning to some of these ideas. And I guess what's interesting is that one of the reference points when I started writing Thistlebone was looking into the kind of history of the Green Man and like the Horned God and all these different incarnations of sort of pagan deities. And what's interesting about it is a lot of them have very nuanced, they're very nuanced kind of figures in terms of they're not wholly good and they're not wholly bad, but they represent both things. So they're both savage and divine. And so it's quite an interesting point of reference for this kind of horror.
But yeah, before I started out on it, there was a... just by chance, there was a film by Paul Wright called Arcadia that came out. So I went to cinema to see that, which is a film just made up of all BFI's clips from whenever Pathé started or BBC started of sort of rituals around Britain. And he also sort of stuck in stuff that happens now, like sort of, or stuff that happened in the 90s, like rave culture, and just mixed it all up just to make this sort of incredibly strange sort of a patchwork of the weirdness of Englishness and Britishness. And I just think that works really well because, I mean, sort of having clips of people sort of, taking part in you know, the mummers and the Lewis, the swinging of the tar barrels and stuff like that. And you think, geez, that's really peculiar. How did they get to that point? And then switching out to some rave in the middle of some warehouse in Manchester. And you think it's not a million miles away. And it's just this curious sort of, almost sort of worship of something that isn't present that I found particularly fascinating.
There's a strong... I read a very interesting thing just recently about the folk horror revival. That it's interesting that it's coming now, because the last time it was really popular was in the sort of 70s and very early 80s. And whether this is an apocalyptic element to horror, because you particularly things like, I guess, the Wicker Man, you see that kind of disillusion of the self, the destruction of authority, that kind of thing. And they linked it to the fear of annihilation from nuclear war that was going on with the particularly heightened tensions in the Cold War. And now people are becoming very aware of the threat of the climate catastrophe. Do you think that's an element of it? It's a reaction to mortality and our part in the kind of wider universe?
Yeah, in some ways, I think it's probably more a reaction to technology.
Mm.
So you know, like with the 70s, it was the kind of the fear of the nuclear age. Now we're in this sort of fear of the information age. We're seeing the sort of dark side of that kind of unravel. And it tends to be that when people react, you know, what you look back and it is one sort of way of doing it. The weird thing with folk horror is you look back and it's kind of got this uneasy feeling to it. So it's not a nostalgic looking back. It's a kind of it's got a very mixed emotional aspect to it. But yeah, I think it's definitely to do, especially it fits nicely with the environmental catastrophe, because I think we realize that we're so disconnected from the countryside and the land and nature that we need to, that we, you know, it's one of the ways that we're kind of connecting with it, even though it's, you know, through horror, it's still a sort of way of trying to almost kind of explore your feelings towards it. If that doesn't sound too pretentious.
Oh. I do think it's a... the fascinating thing about folk horror is our complete sort of... the fundamental sort of disconnect between us as a species to the land. I mean, on a very basic level, is the land providing us food? And, you know... you go into sort of supermarkets and everything, and there's food from the whole world. So the whole concept of harvest is completely lost. So, you know, you expect, you know, the food, tomatoes, all the year round, lettuces and everything like that. So we have an absolute sort of ignorance of the earth works in a particular way. You have your spring, you have your summer, you have your autumn, you have your winter, and then it's a cycle. Whereas now we've just completely ignored that in a sort of, for instance, a food kind of way. And so therefore, it's inevitable, probably spiritually, we just pay the price for that.
Because it's been interesting to watch the revival of folk horror over the last few years, because it certainly took me by surprise, but the way it's manifested itself has been quite unusual, because you've got things like Scarfolk. Richard Little is absolutely fantastic. Well, it started off as a blog and has gone on to become its own thing. That's very much playing with notions of the uncanny and the dangerous, particularly for those of us who grew up in the 70s and 80s and who were constantly being terrified by public information warning films. Yeah, yeah. Like, I still get really nervous around electricity pylons. Like, not like if I'm right up against it, but like if I see one in the distance, I go, oh no, and get struck by, get hit by the electricity. So, do you think, as you say, Tom, this is a reaction to technology, and then and also the realization that it's going to be nature that will claim us. You know, nature will change, and it is very likely it will consume us.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. I think, you know, because it's kind of it's figuring out where the horror is. And I think the horror is that idea that nature is something that's all powerful. Mm. And that really bothers people, I think, because you don't want to be reminded of that, especially nowadays when, you know, it just seems like we're on top of everything in some respects, in terms of, you know, living nowadays, you live a healthy life, you eat well, and you have all these sort of benefits, but underneath and behind everything is the kind of the nature is always the master, you know. So it's kind of a strange aspect.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is true. It sounds great, but I sort of heard somebody say that we see ourselves as the superior species on the planet, the absolute top of the heap. But with that, we are the only ones that could be removed, and the Earth would be fine. If you removed any of the others, we'd be absolutely in trouble. So, and I quite like that as a sort of a check about us getting above our station, about our role in the world. We're just part of it. We aren't it. You see what I mean?
Mm.
In terms of the actual kind of jumps, the scares, folk horror is quite different to your kind of slasher horror and things like that, in that it's playing with, certainly, you know, in the examples that I've seen, it's playing with people's minds, people's perception of reality. Is that something that you wanted to touch on in Thistlebone, that what we think to be truth, what we think to be real, is very much open to interpretation and manipulation?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Especially with like the kind of idea of the uncanny, visually, there's a lot of stuff that's kind of like, kind of off putting. But also the stuff that I was trying to get in that was, almost psychological, just the idea of the things that are most disturbing are kind of belief systems. So Avril, the main character, has to sort of deal with the fact that she's, you know, got some of these belief systems from this weird cult that she sort of inherited, and the real horror is the kind of disquieting feeling of not knowing what's reality, and that you kind of make up reality as well. So that was part of it.
Yeah, from the sort of art side of things, it was quite freeing in the fact that I, you know, when there was a lot of the imagery which may or may not be true. So So sort of Avril sort of is, you know, I don't know if it's not really, it's, God, it's not a spoiler or anything, but there's, you know, flashbacks and stuff like that, and the whole misremembering what has happened, and sort of what she perceives that she's seen that may or may not be true, and the sizes might be not true or accurate. And I quite like that idea of the fact that, you know, the thing that terrifies you most is your thoughts about what is terrifying and what is there, what is out there ready to get you. You make up all kinds of stories to scare yourself, really. And I quite like that. I quite like the way Tom wrote that.
I like the way you drew it.
Get a room.
Yeah, come on now.
Well, let's talk about this one specifically. Tom, give us a bit more detail about how Thistlebone came about as a concept, and how you two came to be working together on it.
So originally, it just started off with conversation about folk horror, and then we kind of had the idea of maybe pitching a folk horror strip to Matt, and sort of seeing how it went. And then I kind of thought up a few ideas. It changed quite a few times, I have to say. It sort of originally... quite a different story, and but we kind of worked on it to sort of refine it and basically try and make it a bit different from the other folk horrors that are out there, but at the same time having lots of nods to the kind of stories that we're familiar with. We sort of just kind of worked it from there, and I think we already knew what we both wanted in terms of especially visually, the kind of stuff that we wanted to include, the kind of ingredients of the sort of folk horror. And I really tried to tailor that to Simon's artwork, because I knew that it's perfect for this sort of thing, because it's all about atmosphere. It's all about kind of those kind of amazing pagan imagery and all this sort of stuff. So,
and there's no technology, because I'm hopeless at drawing that. But yeah, I was very pleased that there was so much sort of nature involved in it. I mean, one of the sort of books that had a big impact on me when I was young, and I do sort of consider it quite folk horror-y, is Watership Down, because it's exactly the same fear of, you know, these rabbits have to move because of technology and a new housing estate or whatever that's moving in, and so I liked, you know, I really wanted to get sort of some animals, and I had this sort of overwhelming thing about having these great big foxes or hares and stags sort of wandering around the forest. So they almost became the forest at night, was these moving part, the creatures were the forest moving around, if you see what I mean. So yeah, Tom was good at that again. Sorry, Tom.
No, that's good. No, because, well, originally I think that you'd sort of mentioned some of the thing, specifically that, you'd mentioned that early on, and so I kind of worked that in, which I guess is the, you know, that's quite a good way to work, where it goes back and forth. I've sort of done that before, and that seems to be a good...
I think the seed was sown, or when we, I think we all went, myself, Tom, Boo, and a few others. We went to this wood down south near Tom, which is an old yew wood. Yeah. Just wandering around there, and thought, yeah, this would be a pretty cool thing to do. Actually, we all had interest in, particularly, I know Tom had interest in that sort of stuff anyway, and me too. So it just seemed like the perfect solution. It's just a pain that it seemed to take so long to do, because I think that this was supposed to be out sort of beginning of the year, but various things happened that sort of put it back, but I'm glad it's finally seeing the light of day.
Mm. So, Tom, this does feel quite kind of, I apologise for this term, zeitgeisty, in that folk horror is about to get a big boost again. We've got the film Midsommar coming out, which looks absolutely amazing. And just a little while ago, and it's an American bit of kind of crime drama folk horror, was the first series of The Sinner with Bill Pullman as well, which does kind of deal with ever so slightly similar setup to Thistlebone, in that you're dealing with cults.
Yeah, and I guess True Detective, the first series of that, had a few shades of kind of, you know, that kind of weird cult-like folk horror sort of influence. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I genuinely didn't expect folk horror to be this popular at the moment, but it does seem to have suddenly had this quite a big push. You know, and we were talking about this originally, the project, you know, a few years back, and there hadn't been much then, but it seems to be now quite a big kind of theme. So it's good to actually be part of that.
Yeah, I live in East London, and in Whitechapel there's quite a famous sort of cinema there called the Genesis, and they had for a while, it seems to be on a bit of a hiatus at the moment, a folk horror cinema club, and they had sort of showings of The Wicker Man and Don't Look Now, even though that wasn't technically a folk horror, but their Wicker Man was originally a double bill release with that. So, and then sort of things like Field in England and Blood on Satan's Claw, and that sort of was an indication that the cinema used to be pretty full each time. So it was definitely a sort of a critical mass of people, you know, sort of interested in it. So yeah, I think it's a really interesting sort of subject. I mean, it is, there's a really fantastic Facebook group called Folk Horror Revival, and they release sort of, and I think Folk Horror Revival is an umbrella thing where they release various books on writings and stuff about psychogeography and films, music, and et cetera. So there is a definite sort of, it's almost like a harking back to sort of, particularly the music, sort of like, you know, the 1970s prog and stuff like that. Mm, mm. So there is definitely something in the furrows that is rising up, and there's a definite sort of interest in it.
So, tell us a little bit about the central premise of Thistlebone.
So it's the central premise is really following Avril, who's a woman that's been who was abducted as a child by this bizarre cult and managed to escape, and then 20 years later she returns to the woods where it happened, along with a journalist, to kind of go over what happened to her, and it's really about the kind of memories that she unravels, and then the myths surrounding this entity known as Thistlebone, and that's the sort of central premise. It's kind of a mixture of folk rituals and horror and madness, and it's all that kind of wrapped up together.
Yeah, no, it is one of those sort of things where you, certainly I felt when I was doing it, any one time when you're reading or whatever, you think, oh yeah, this is happening, and then you suddenly think, well, maybe it isn't like a linear story, maybe this isn't actually happening, you've only got Avril's word for it that any of this is true. She might be just making the whole thing up and stuff, and I quite like that aspect of it.
Yeah, we tried to sort of do, it was quite a lot of ambiguity with the story, and kind of specifically the idea of having someone's memories as the kind of lens that you see a lot of the story through. You can't tell whether they're being reliable or not, and what's come from them and what's come from outside. So that was a big part as well.
So I want to talk about some of the techniques you use visually for this series, because I mean, in the past when we've talked about horror, it's been generally accepted horror is sometimes a very difficult thing to do in comics, because if you are reliant on the speed at which the reader is reading the page, what technique to kind of control the way that they are reading it and the way that they might react to it.
Well, I guess one of the big parts is with horror comics specifically is you don't have sound, which is a huge, huge part of horror. If you think about all horror films, you know, such a huge part is all to do with sound. So having that removed, it places more of the emphasis on the imagery, but also the pacing in terms of with comics, you can slow people down with how many panels you have on a page and where you're going to show something if it's, you know, over the page. And there's sort of various ways to do that. Folk horror is quite good for it because it's a lot of it is to do with atmosphere and kind of those uncanny, disturbing images. So it's more about sort of seeping into someone's consciousness rather than giving them the kind of the jump fright. So from the script side of things, that's where I came from it.
Yeah, and so I sort of got into the habit with comics, sort of when I started Slane, of sort of roughing it out, doing colour roughs the whole story. So I wanted to do that with Thistlebone too, and sort of a good way of sort of, I suppose, just instilling menace rather than sort of as a horror element rather than sort of, you know, blood and guts and all that sort of, because it isn't particularly that sort of story. And the way of doing that was just sort of shifting of the sort of palette of the pages, really. So there's sort of juxtapositions from really bright, sunny, beautiful days where the birds are singing and all that, and then into the heart of the dark woods, and sort of just trying to play with that kind of shifting of tone to sort of hopefully create a bit of just, you know, unsettling, really, rather than sort of jump scares and all that sort of thing. Because that sort of thing is very hard to do unless you absolutely are sure about which page how the story is going to appear in the comic, because you sometimes you can have a reveal page, but you just have to make sure that you know that is the page, the last page you turn over onto or something like that. But, you know, so but luckily we didn't have to particularly worry about that sort of thing, because it's not a particularly a jump fest. It's just quite a sort of a seeping sort of terror thing and threat sort of story.
Because you, Simon, you've got form with 2000 AD horror before, because you did Stone Island with Ian Edgington, and that was much more your kind of a thriller style horror. But I still got a kind of folk horror 1970s vibe from it, mainly because of the palette you were using.
Yeah, and I mean that all sort of took place in Dartmoor, which is a place I particularly love. And I mean, it's incredible. I think it's an absolute. I think it is a unique sort of ecosystem in the world. So I wanted to set something there. So Ian Edgington was pretty good with that. And so therefore, you know, that all the sort of stories I grew up with, like Hound of the Baskervilles and horror stories like that, they all had a sense of place. And I think place is very important. If you're sort of reading a book or reading a comic, and you constantly thinking, well, yeah, this is good, but where is it happening? And so sort of a sense of place is very important. So with Stone Island, yeah, I mean, hopefully there was a bit of there was another isolated feel to that, where they were all stuck in this ridiculously designed prison that for some reason they had. But there are elements to that, but I think Stone Island was a bit of a gore fest.
Tom, with a series like Thistlebone, which is 10 parts, what's your general discipline with pacing on something like this? Because that, by 2080 standards, that's a fairly chunky story.
You know, the first part is 10 pages as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how do you kind of moderate your pacing as you go through on something like this?
I guess with this, it was really a case of I sort of plotted it out a lot more. I tend to do you know, the writer's equivalent to an artist's thumbnails, which is just literally going through the amount of pages I've got and placing where I need to have the kind of main images or slow the action down or speed it up and that sort of thing. So, it's kind of with this, yeah, I sat down and plotted a bit more carefully because I wanted to make sure the pacing didn't feel rushed at all. Because with specifically this type of thing, you want to be sort of going slow yet with lots of stuff happening, but with that feeling that it's kind of you know, probably more a rural kind of pace, so that you've just got this much gentler kind of rhythm to it all.
And with the characters, what was your intention? Because sometimes with horror stuff, people can get a little bit tropey. They you know, the characters are essentially have characteristics to further the plot, to allow them to be taken advantage of in some way. What came first, the idea of Thistlebone or the character?
A bit of both, because there was a sort of main idea of Thistlebone, and then, but specifically, Avril, the main character, really, I really wanted to do someone that was sort of quite psychologically flawed, in that she's, you know, someone that survived something that's horrible, and then how that effect has manifested in their consciousness. So it's that was quite interesting, because that was quite that's a nice sort of character to work with the various flaws, and someone that's kind of got on with their life and then gone back to this kind of trauma, and it kind of how it can unravel you quite quickly. And so, yeah, so that it was a mixture of both, and I tried to avoid with other characters having anything too obvious and too tropey. So yeah, that was the main thing. And then there's a character called Hillman, who's the leader of a cult, and that was kind of the basis for that was the idea of, if you had, you know, a kind of an eco commune that had been poisoned by a Charles Manson-like figure. You know, I was trying to use that idea of what would happen if the equivalent of Charles Manson for the environmental movement sort of occurred. So that was quite a nice challenge to have as well.
I mean, you've just mentioned somebody that I was going to bring into the discussion. Charles Manson kind of is the how to describe him, dark shadow. Whenever you're sort of talking about kind of 1970s culture and cults and things like that. Again, how do you kind of use a situation which we all feel familiar with, you know, not necessarily because we've all been in contact with cults, but because we recognise it as a trope from TV. How do you bring something fresh to that?
I sort of tried to basically put myself in the mindset of, you know, make it as plausible as possible. So how would you get to the point that you would do terrible things for your beliefs? And I actually sort of thought, well, it's not too far removed to think of specifically the Charles Manson as quite an interesting kind of reference point, because he, you know, I'd read stuff about him years ago and how he'd just successfully kind of subverted essentially all these kind of ideas of free love and turned them into something really dark quite quickly. And so I kind of understood a bit of that psychology, and I think maybe that's quite kind of an interesting time to do it, which is this time when we're having kind of ecological crisis, but how that can maybe be taken up by the wrong people.
And are you thinking about stories beyond the initial? Like, I don't want to give anyone any spoilers, but has the process of doing Thistlebone given you a way to continue the story?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna see how this goes, and there's definitely more, because it's quite there are many sort of different angles you can come at it, because it's a big part of it is the location where it's set, the woods, and you know, it's kind of spread over time as well, which gives a lot of possibilities. So yeah, there's definitely
I think there's definitely scope to explore or go off on a tangent or continue or whatever, really. So yeah, it's good.
So because you came onto Thistlebone having done a run with Pat Mills on Slain, what was that experience like, going from that kind of I suppose what some folk horror is harking back to, kind of like the mythological pagan past, to something a bit more contemporary?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of did, I think it was about five, maybe 6 years on Slain, and I sort of got, you know, got four books done, and you know, it was hugely enjoyable, and I just thought, you know, that's a good time to pass it on to somebody else, but I really loved the sort of just painting nature, really, and you know, with Slain walking through the woods and the countryside and everything, and I just realised, you know, that's where my fit is. I mean, with for 2000, I've sort of drawn quite a lot of stuff for them. Sort of been working for 25 years this year for them, and you know, most of the stuff I've done is, you know, I've really enjoyed doing it, but I've never felt, you know, I'm as an artist a really great fit. So when Slain came along, I just thought, well, this is probably nearest, damn it, the best fit I'll have. This is back to not being able to draw technology and all that. And so, you know, when we sort of talking to Tom about what we wanted to do, this seemed like a perfect solution, really. Something we were both really interested in, the sort of the whole genre, but also giving us a chance to, or me a chance to draw stuff that I really wanted to draw. So, yeah, it's perfect, really.
Because there is another element to your involvement in this one, in that you are a member of a folk horror rock band.
Oh, yeah.
Folktale.
Boo Cook and me, we sort of started doing this project, I suppose, about 3 or 4 years ago. We just started off with doing one song. I mean, Boo's a massive sort of fan of things like The Wicker Man and stuff like that. And so we were just talking about things like that. And he obviously plays in bands, has played in bands since he was a kid. And I've done the same. And so we just sort of just went over to his place and sort of recorded one song. And then from that, using the sort of folk horror as the umbrella, which really helps with creating music. You know, we sort of literally as sort of thinking, oh yeah, what I want to do a song about, I don't know, a yew forest, like the one we've just done with Tom or something, which is probably he instigated wanting to do a song about that, and then we try and record music that is sympathetic to that. So, I mean, it's been quite interesting, really. My doing this, for want of a better word, my actual work with Thistlebone, and then sort of doing this band with Boo has sort of been quite a holistic approach to the whole thing, really, which is great.
And one of the things that we're going to be doing for the launch of Thistlebone is setting up a Spotify playlist so that people can kind of listen along to thematic music to go with the first double length episode. If people wanted to kind of delve into folk horror to pick out key things that have influenced the series, what are the kind of books and films that should be? I mean, we've mentioned some, but what are the kind of books and films that they should be seeking out?
Well, certainly for films, I mean, you'd be pretty sort of good. I mean, I would imagine most people have seen, particularly 2000 readers, have seen The Wicker Man. But Blood on Satan's Claw is really good. It's a bit wiggy in parts, but I think it's pretty brilliant. And Witchfinder General is an interesting film, because I really do find it quite incredibly distasteful in parts, and you know, very bad tempered as a film, which I suppose was completely planned. But I, of those three, I find that the most disturbing. And but those two are great. And then sort of more contemporary, The Witch is a great film, which came.
Yeah, that's a great one. Yeah, The Witch.
I saw The Ritual quite recently. That's pretty good. And like you say, what was it? Summer.
Midsummer and Kill List.
Oh, yeah, Midsummer. You know, what John Nettles will think about that. God.
Oh, he was in it. Is he not in it?
He should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's pretty good. And then I don't know, Tom, what you think about music and all that sort of stuff.
Well, I mean, Folktale's great. The funnily enough, I was listening to that when I was writing it, and a lot of the soundtracks to those films are all pretty good. And I guess who else would be good?
Yeah, Mark Wilkinson's soundtrack to Blood on Satan's Claws, fantastic, absolutely brilliant piece of work. And I was listening to actually Boo put me in touch with Richard Dawson, his album Peasant is absolutely fantastic.
Yes, that was the other one I was listening to. That is great as well. Yeah, it's got very.
Have you heard that, Mike?
No, I haven't actually.
Really good. I mean, there's some fantastic songs from the point of view of I don't know, a sort of soldier in Civil War and stuff like that. It's really amazing.
You immediately have my attention.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that earlier on, you know, Field in England kind of came up as one of the things. It's one of my favourite films, for obvious reasons. But just that kind of unsettling nature of the whole thing. It's absolutely adore it.
Yeah, so
slightly hallucinatory feel to it, but still you can't be quite certain about what you're watching and what is this actually happening, or is this just somebody just off their heads and that sort of hysterical sort of thing. I mean, certainly Blood on Satan's Claws a lot to do with that, about the hysteria sort of almost in a sort of the Crucible type way, where you know, people are whipped up to do things that they would normally not do, and you don't quite know whether there is absolutely a malevolent power or it's just humans being humans and just trying to assert their power over their peers or whatever.
And there's a good audiobook new version of the Blood on Satan's Claws.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That works well as well. It's got a great kind of feel to it in terms of folk horror.
Have you heard that, Mike?
No, I haven't.
It's really great. I mean, I think, you know, Mark Gatiss is in it, and Rhys Shearsmith and Mark Morris did the adaptation. It's fantastic, really, really.
Because earlier on you mentioned M.R. James, and I personally give a shout out to the 1970s adaptations that were done of his stories, which I watch every Halloween. So I watch one every evening while I'm making tea, and some of those are just absolutely downright terrifying.
Yeah, as part of this folk horror cinema club thing that I used to go to, they had a double bill of Whistle and I'll Come to You, the Michael Horden adaptation of that.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
There was another one. What was it, set on a railway line? God.
The Signalman.
Whistle and I'll Come to You is absolutely terrifying. You know, Michael Horden's character on the beach, and then he turning around and seeing in the distance his figure just relentlessly following him. And the sheets at the end, you know, it's just, you know, so simple, but it's just, you know, M.R. James had a really good understanding of what is terrifying and what isn't. So, I know that stuff is amazing.
Yeah, I'm thinking of comics. There's not, I can't think of many comics, folk horror specifically, but good horror comics. Junji Ito is fantastic, and occasionally you get some stuff that's kind of folk horror with his tales. David Hine did a great thing called Strange Embrace, which is really good horror. And actually, John Smith's Cradle Grave is one of my favourite horror comics of all time.
Mm.
But that's very urban. But it's really great example of horror in comics, which is a good one.
Well, that neatly brings me around to what I wanted to kind of round off with is talking about Thistlebone in the context of 2000 AD and what horror we've published in the past. And I was very much struck how certain elements brought to mind Luke Kirby.
Oh, okay.
Just that kind of, you know, the rural is strange, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, I guess. I mean, it just sort of, yeah, my influences were quite a few, and pretty much 2000 AD always kind of is always the background to a lot of my creative output. And specific, yeah, I think Cradle Grave, funnily enough, was a reference point for me for I was trying to think of a rural opposite to the kind of urban story that I was telling, and that, because I think John Smith's great, and that particularly I think is a really strong story.
Yeah, the art in that was amazing.
Mm.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, I so you sort of forget that that Two Towers, I know it's predominantly a sci-fi comic, but I think there's always had that horror element to it, and I think this is quite a nice fit to the whole, to, you know, to its whole roster, really. So yeah, I was pretty pleased that Matt sort of went for it, really.
Mm.
Okay, brilliant. Well, like I said, I've read the first couple of episodes and absolutely loving it, and looking forward to seeing what the reaction from the readers is. I think we've come to the end of our chat. So, guys, thank you very much for being on the podcast this week.
Thanks, pleasure.
Yeah, no, it's great. Thanks, Mike. Cheers.
Well, thanks so much to Simon and Tom for talking about Thistlebone, which debuts next week in the Galaxy's Greatest Comic. Make sure you pick up Prog 2135 for the debut of this brand new series. Well, that's all from the 2080s forecast this week. Earthlings, make sure you tune in 2 weeks' time when we bring you more from Tharg's mighty organ, Splendid Verthrig.
Power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the Galaxy's Greatest Comic at 2000adonline.com. Subscribe digitally on our apps for Apple, Android, and Windows 10. And download DRM free copies from 2000adonline.com. Alert! Alert! Stand by for urgent updates. Search for 2000AD on Twitter and Facebook. Watch the latest videos at youtube.com/2000ADonline and follow on Instagram at insta2000AD. Program complete. Shutting down.